obviously practically, you know.
Yeah, so here's the topic. Here's the topic for tonight. Liot or lagoyim, to be a light unto the nations. The question is, do we have any obligation as Jews to teach non-Jews or try to pervade the Gentile society with what our values are, or to try to foster or promote the Shemitah B'nai Noach, the seven Noachide laws? Is there any chiv on our part to try to steer public debate in order to embrace Jewish values? Not necessarily because they're Jewish values in terms of being religious values, but because they're logical, they're rational, and they're good. They will better people's lives. Is there such an obligation? So, obviously, as you've seen, some would say no, that our primary objective should be to protect ourselves, to keep a low profile. And the more we keep religion out of the public domain or discussion of public affairs, so no religion is going to encroach upon our freedom of worship, and therefore we should not do anything. When Thomas Jefferson, you've heard of him, when he wrote, this was early in his career, in his letter, Notes on the State of Virginia, and they were forming a Virginia Constitution, and the issue came up, which of course is very novel for a society then, about freedom of religion, and Jefferson was an absolutist in keeping religion out of government. And he said that, I quote, "But it does me no injury for my neighbor to say there are 20 gods or no god. It neither picks my pocket nor breaks my leg." Now the strength of Jefferson's... Want a copy?
No.
Oh. Do it. You're going to take Vienna? Take Vienna. The... strength of Jefferson's argument is that until that time, society was noted and very often torn asunder by religious wars, especially the countries in Europe. Right. With that, I mean, the societies are still driven by religious warfare in any event across the world, but that's a strength. If you have an official religion, which is one of the things he was speaking of, or limiting rights of worship, as was another factor in his contention, that you're going to have constant strife in society, and therefore it's best that government abstain from doing anything that touches on religion or involving religion in any aspect of the society. That's the strength of the argument. It's a plausible argument. The downside of the argument is public policy is always informed by values, and very often religious values, or at least values that are rooted in religion. So you wouldn't say, for example, that if society bans homicide, a secular society, a society that is not at all influenced by religion, should not do that, because the Torah says lo tirzach, and therefore you should not commit murder. That's a religious act. You violate one of the Targ Mitzvot by killing someone, murdering someone. You wouldn't say such a thing, because laws in society, whether it's an American, a European, for that matter, Israeli society, are always going to be influenced by the values, by certain values. Whenever you want a law, the law represents a certain set of interests, a certain set of values. Very often, of course, they're conflicting values and interests. Like you see, for example, in the great homosexual debates that are taking place in Israel, in America, how to navigate the new ideas about marriage, the extension of marriage, or how do you permit it to that group and that group. So very often it goes to the lowest common denominator, that you should not interfere in a person's love, which sounds great, but then why can't you permit incest? Why should the law ban, bless you, why should the law ban polygamy? If a man loves three women, or a woman loves three men, why can't they have that formal contractual relationship with which is marriage? If a brother and a sister, both adults, want to marry each other, let's say for the tax benefits, why shouldn't they? So obviously, every law is going to be informed by certain values, and the question becomes then, what are the source of those values? Are those values coming from me? Are those values coming from what's loosely called reason? or are those values being informed by the Bible? What do you want to say?
Well, what somebody who's strictly going according to these arguments might say is, I have no problem with all these things. Look, I might find such and such behavior distasteful, but
yes,
you know, morally I don't have a problem with it.
That's Jefferson's approach. It neither picks your pocket nor breaks your leg if there's adult incest as marriage or polygamous marriage. And yet society doesn't allow it. It's banned.
Well,
why is that?
What one could say is that's also a religious relic from the past. Or it's
all right, and yet the court has made it quite clear it's not about to permit those types of marriages, even though if you read going back like three or four cases that dealt with this last decade, Justice Thomas and before him Justice Scalia, Olav Hashalom, said this is the natural evolution of society. If you're going to have laws that are just based on modern sensibilities that'll change decade to decade, but not based on anything that is more objective, you're going to have to deal with that because it's hypocritical and it is illogical to permit one and ban another.
Okay.
Of course, yes.
So the point of the show is to go into detail about this topic, right? So
no. The point of detail is to go into.
I was going to go further into it,
but it's okay. You can. What do you want to say?
I was going to say that, like, I think there's like a difference between, like, in these, maybe not marriage itself, but I think it's a difference between, like, a sexual relationship and gay relationships, just because we can, you know, at least, like, if you're talking about specifically, like, when you create a baby, right, we know that
right. In
sexual relationships would be caused.
Well, let's say, for example, homosexuals cannot create a baby.
What if they don't have a baby? What if they're...
Older people get married. Older brother, sister living two separate apartments. Why can't they take advantage of the tax benefits?
Right. And so if you're saying for marriage, I don't think you could go for, like, the innately, it's not the innately wrong with it.
Right.
Ultimately, right, it stems from the fact that we associate marriage with the idea of childbearing. And
obviously, in terms of male-male relationship, we don't.
Right, exactly. So
I think that Rubicon was crossed. Hmm. That Rubicon was crossed. Once we say that two non-childbearing people can marry, then childbearing becomes an incidental aspect of marriage,
Yes. Not
an essential aspect of marriage,
that's right.
In which case we go to the next stage. But there are other examples also. By the way, a whole other area to raise is something that Israeli society is wrestling with now, the Chok Aflaya. They call it discrimination law. But basically it's a religious conscience law. Meaning, to what extent does society have the right to tell you have to violate your conscience in order to serve some other good, all right? The classic case, you know, in America you had the last few years, the Masterpiece Bake Shop case. Guy makes custom wedding cakes, refused to do it for a homosexual marriage. In Israel you had almost a similar thing. So Jack Phillips won before the Supreme Court, although not on religious worship grounds, religious freedom grounds. In Beersheba, there's a Beit HaDfus, a printing house, that refused to make invitations for, I think it was a lesbian wedding, and they were fined tens of thousands of shekels. Another wedding hall, I just read the other day, oddly enough, owned by Messianic Jews up north in this country, in Israel, they refused to host a lesbian wedding. They were fined. And once they were fined, you had like dozens of couples apply for a right to marry there, and they just closed down the business. At what point does a merchant, a proprietor, have the right to say, this violates my conscience? Now, part of it is someone who was a big hullabaloo last week. Part of it is that doctors should not be forced to violate their conscience. And as it turns out, Israeli law already protects that. Okay? But to take it to the next case, Laniato Hospital in Netanya, you've heard of that. It's run by Haredim, and Laniato refuses to allow fertility treatments for non-married couples or unmarried women. Whoever the posuk is said they can't do that. Do they have the right to do that? Well, Israel really has no law protecting religious liberties. Strange as it sounds. And therefore, there are many violations of conscience. So the way it's portrayed in the media is that if a person wants to act in a way that comports with his or her own conscience, but violates the rights of someone else, or evinces some type of discrimination, that cannot be allowed. Horror of horrors. So to give one famous and one less famous example, the famous example is by ruling of the, I think at the time she was deputy state attorney, Dina Zilber, you're not allowed to have any public event that is segregated, separated between men and women. So we want to have a concert, a public event, they're not allowed to have a separation. And the most famous example of this, Motti Steinmetz, you've heard of him? Singer, young guy, he had a big program in Afula, thousands of people, and the police came to shut it down because there was a mechitza there. Alright? And the mayor said, well, there are 100 events a year in the public. 99 don't have mechitza. One wants to. Why should we complain? But the police had to follow the decision of the state attorney. It doesn't sound very democratic, but nonetheless, that can't be. Well, part of the chok they want to pass is not, yeah, they want to have it in public. You don't have to go. You don't like it mixed, don't go. You don't like it separate, don't go, period. The other case someone wrote about, which is now hypothetical, but may not be down the road, is a female, it was a masseuse, all right, female massage therapist, and she only does women, all right. If a man comes to her and asks for a massage, in the case that happened, it was a transgender male who came to her, transgender female, was a male, etc., and she refused. Does she have the right to refuse under current law? Meaning, does she have the right to refuse to serve as males because she's a woman, or vice versa? What would you say?
No.
No, tell me why not.
Because that's discrimination.
Yeah, okay. We do discriminate. Im ein dat avdola minayin. We're mavdil constantly. You have to make distinctions in life. But does she have the right to say, I'm not comfortable doing it now? Why could you force me? Why does she have that right?
I mean, I don't seem like, according to the other example, she wouldn't.
I'm assuming it was...
Well, under the law, she might not be allowed to.
Are you saying
what? But the question is, what should the law be?
Well, I'm assuming in this case, just to clarify, that it was a person that had transitioned from male to female.
Right, but still had male organs.
Sure.
But identified as a woman.
Yeah.
And she was not comfortable giving him a massage.
Okay.
Apparently he just left. He didn't sue or anything. But... who knows what if there is no law that protects religious freedom or one's conscience, who knows what's going to happen? And to me, it seems obvious. I was listening last week on the radio to Simcha Rotman, who's now the chairman of the Knesset Constitution and Law Committee, and he's looking for a paradigm shift. It's a very clever approach, because now the basic approach in the West is... you're not allowed to discriminate at all in your private or public life, with exceptions. Okay? That's basically the approach. What he wants to do is shift the paradigm that a person is allowed to act in accordance with their own conscience, period, with exceptions. In other words, the default will be, I have the right to be true to my values. That's the default. Now the default is, no, you have to succumb to society's values. And that is the big question. Yes, sir.
So it's... most of the time, it's easy to see why discrimination is bad.
Yes.
And it's... and I could say that it is a moral... I mean, being forced onto... in some scenarios, it's a moral being forced onto the nation, right? Or the people. And I like...
well, I don't want to say that discrimination is necessarily bad. It depends what. So, for example, you marry a Jew and not a Gentile. That's discrimination. You are literally discriminating and barring the eligibility of most of the females of the planet because they're not Jews. How is that not discrimination? So you'll tell me, well, the Torah says I can't. Meaning, discrimination that is based on some religious principle, you have to accommodate somehow. Now, the specter that's always raised in society is race. Let's say, because this happened in the 1850s, 1840s. based on the Bible, the South discriminated against the blacks. I don't know anybody today who would argue that discrimination against blacks is biblically based. Even before the Civil War, what's that?
No.
You have a source?
No.
There's no source. Even before the Civil War, the arguments were strained. In other words, they were looking for a justification in the Bible in order to discriminate against blacks. But you wouldn't say a person will look at the Torah and say, yes, that's why the law will discriminate between a black and a white. You couldn't find that in the Torah. It's Mishpon Echad Yelochem, Kager Kazrochiyah. Doesn't matter what race a person is. So that's the big, that's really the big issue in America. But less so here. It comes up here as well, because you do have discrimination against Ethiopian Jews.
That's what I was thinking of. You're making me think that, it's not just... you could really think of a lot of laws then, at least in these specific cases, as morals being forced onto people, just like the, just like the
Torah. That's correct. Would you say that it's immoral to want to only marry a Jew instead of a Gentile?
Is it moral or immoral?
Is it moral?
In a certain context, it'd be immoral.
The context?
Let's say you're beating someone.
Is it the Torah's moral? Is it my moral? Is it the U.S.'s moral?
That's a question. How we define morality. Moral. If the Torah is our source of morality, then of course it's moral. Because va'avdol chemin amim, God set
us
aside.
Sam, we're talking about in a void. What you're doing is...
It's
not a void. It's in the cocoon of the Torah. The Torah posited this.
The issue with what you're doing is not wanting to marry a Jew, it's leading somebody...
What's your case? Sorry, you're leading someone where? I didn't understand your case.
Joey made as a good point, you can avoid or not. But in the real world, let's say you have this idea that only you marry a Jew, and you don't make that clear to someone, a non-Jew, that you're in a relationship for a reason, you can argue that...
That's fraud.
Yeah.
That's deception. I agree with that. But that's not a Jew-non-Jew issue. That's really a corrupt Jew issue. You're not honest with someone.
If you're viewing your moral statement of only marrying a Jew as a general statement or a thing that shapes the way you live your life.
I would say like this: from a Western value perspective, it's immoral and ridiculous. From a Jewish perspective, it's an ultimate value.
I think there are some questions we actually answer first, before we consider any of these questions. I think one is that, like we say, do we think that there are believe that there are any morals that exist that surround the Torah, that like the Torah is the Torah is subservient to?
Yes.
Right? Or do we say that the
not subservient to, but emanate from the Torah?
No, that's my point. There are some people that believe, right, that...
Yeah, Reform Jews.
No.
You mean there's a natural ethic?
That there is some... Not Reform Jews, is that there is some kind of innate moral code that exists, and that the Torah is subservient to it, or do we believe that...
Word subservient, but I know what you're saying, because
Rav Kook
posited such a thing.
But you could say that the Torah reveals... There's true morals, or do we say that the Torah in and of itself, right, is its own moral justification?
Let's
because
put it like
it's
this.
True, or because it comes from
that's a good question. Right. I would answer like this. Rav Kook writes about something he called Musar Tivi, natural ethics. And he said the Torah can never contradict that. Now, I happen to maintain that all these ethics come from the Torah. I read years ago, it's a little hard to wade through. I made the mistake of reading in Hebrew, not in English. Rav Aaron Lichtenstein posited such a thing as well. There's such a thing as natural law that really transcends the Torah in a certain sense. But if you read his book on the topic, I couldn't find even one value that he posited that comes from natural law or that represents natural law that's not found in the Torah. Not even one.
I think a second question would just say, is there a different code of ethics for non-Jews?
Yes,
and
there
that's an
is.
Question.
There's a basic code of ethics, a universal code that obligates everyone, and then there is a particular code which is more restrictive that obligates Jews.
But maybe more philosophically, is that would we say that it's literally that there is literally different morals for us and non-Jews, or that in some way it's the same morals, but for some reason they apply differently to us than they do to non-Jews. And those, I think, are very important for us to answer before we say it.
Yes, interestingly enough. So I think it's the same. I think just our laws are more, the laws that relate to Jews are more restrictive, but the Gemara has this question, rhetorical question it raises in Sanhedrin, when it talks about abortion for non-Jews, which is more restrictive. So the Gemara asked, and Tosa comments there as well, I think it's Nun Zion, that can there be something that is forbidden to non-Jews but permitted to Jews? All right? Meaning the Torah is much more absolutist when it comes to abortion for non-Jews than it is for Jews. Can there be such a thing? But that's a limited case. I would think that there's another machloket before Sinai, where the Avot and their descendants considered B'nai Noach, where they have a separate status. It's a machloket Rishonim. But if you look into that machloket, you could see that there's a basic framework of morality that binds everyone. But then there's a higher morality that binds Jews. So we're not going to say that what binds non-Jews is immoral, whether something we can do that they can't do in the ordinary case, that can't be. But there's a basic framework of morality that binds everyone. Those limits open a Noach, and there's a higher layer that's built on top of that foundation that binds us. And that gets us into the topic, Liot Or LaGoyim. That's a famous phrase, light unto the nations. You imagine the Reform. They love that phrase, Tikkun Olam, to rectify the world. Or LaGoyim, to be a light unto the nations. But we have to give it some flesh. We have to give it some substance. What does it mean? I'll just make one other point, going back to what I said before. Since public policy and law is always informed by values, should we be absent from that debate? Should Jews, for example, and not taken in American society, or even in Israeli society, where you have a similar but not quite the same dynamic, do we have nothing to say? Or should we say nothing about abortion, about euthanasia, about end of life, about welfare, about chesed, about warfare, about statecraft, about traffic laws, about integrity in government, about violence, about guns, about homosexuals? Every topic that is on the public agenda, do we have the right? Do we have to fulfill a mitzvah? Do we have an obligation to become involved? Or are we better off abstaining and saying it doesn't really affect us? All right, full disclosure, I'm the Israel Region Vice President for a wonderful organization called the Coalition for Jewish Values, that in fact was founded 6-7 years ago in America in order to fill that void. Because we saw, me and some of my colleagues, that when there was an issue for public debate, a moral issue, a values issue, the media went to Reform Jews, and their values are not based in Torah, but based on, you know, progressive agendas. And there was really no address. Occasionally, Orthodox organizations would address it, but way after the news cycle. So that's the void that we tried to fill. And we did it in line with this mandate. So if you look at number one, yes, sir.
Especially since no Jews are living, really living in, like, you know, especially like European shuttles anymore, I don't think there is any big group or denomination of Jewry in any democratic country that doesn't involve itself in the country's politics.
I'll get it after.
It depends whether they're involved in politics, meaning trying to get elected, or they're involved in public policy. Those are two different things. In other words, Jews get involved in politics not necessarily for the betterment of society, to take a simple case. I mean, my Haredi brothers, they're involved in politics in Israel, not because they want to influence the public debate on the major issues of the day, but because they want to protect their constituents and make sure there's more money being sent to them, and they have certain interests that are fostered, but it's not broader. Here, we're basically, I mean, obviously we're a conservative organization and therefore tend to align ourselves more with Republicans, but nonetheless, we're talking about public policy. It need not relate necessarily to any particular political party or to an election, or for that matter, to politicians. Most politicians don't really speak values, which is an issue itself worthy of discussion another time. It's very practical, practically oriented. But nonetheless, what do we tell? Yeshayahu says several times, Ani Hashem kraticha b'tzedek v'achzek b'yodecha. I mean, I call you in justice, I hold you, v'tzarcha, I formed you, v'tencha levrit am l'or goyim. I've given you a covenant of the nations, l'or goyim, you should be a light unto the nations. So Radak says, levrit am, l'kiyum kol am v'am. The brit am, the covenant of nations, means that what we contribute to society, to the world at large, is going to contribute to the survival of each nation. Ki ba'avurcha mitkayem kol ha'olam. The world survives because of us. V'chal britu inyan kiyum. Every covenant involves kiyum. And that's la'or goyim. V'ha'or hu'a Torah sh'teitzei la'amit Zion. The light is Torah, which comes out of Zion. V'yisrael yukimu umot al shnei panim. We represent the survival, the durability of the nations in two ways. One, that there'll be peace for us across the world. And secondly, ki besibat Yisrael yagoyim shomrim sheva mitzvot yelchu b'derech tova, because of us and what we advocate, the nations of the world will observe the Shem Mitzvah Bnei Noach and they'll go in a good way. The Al-Sheikh says in number 3 in that pasuk, the same thing, Lo'or goyim lufkoch einayim evrot. What does it mean to be a light? A light obviously illuminates darkness. It's to open blind eyes. Heima goyim lo'ha'ir einayim titamideim al ha'emet. One of the responsibilities of the Jewish people is to stand the world up and let it face truth. Let them know there's such a thing as absolute truth, objective truth. That's a very debatable point today, very controversial point. Is there something known as objective truth? Well, Jews say proudly and unabashedly, there is such a thing. That's what the Torah is. The Dvar Hashem is the word of truth. And the Malbim adds on this pasuk, Lor Goyim, Eilu Ovdei Kochavim, these are idolaters, Shetair Lohem Ho'emunah, Leval Yelchu Be'afel, V'yakir Achdur Hashem. We have to enlighten the nations with our faith, with our emunah. Emunah is not faith in the sense of, you know, just believing in something. Emunah means our set of contentions. What do we affirm? What philosophical truths or principles do the Jewish people affirm so they'll recognize Achdut Hashem? So Tishael continued, Perek Mem Ted. Unetaticha l'or goyim, yeshuati ad kse oretz. I will place you to be a light unto the nations, so you'll be my salvation to the ends of the world. The nations will go to your light, alright? But what does it mean? The Malbim says, that's Or HaTorah, the light of the Torah. Well, how are the nations of the world supposed to know the light of the Torah if we refrain from public debate? If we're not involved? Where do they have access to this light but through the Jewish people who are speaking of that light? And a famous pasuk, you'll see why in a moment. V'alchu amim rabim, it's the second parak of Yeshayahu. Many nations will go and they'll say, L'chu v'nala har Hashem el beit elokei Yaakov. Let's go ascend to the mountain of God, the Beit HaMikdash, v'yoreinu midrachav, v'nelcho barchatav. They'll teach us of their ways, v'nelcho will go barchatav in their paths, ki mitzion teitzei Torah, dvar Hashem, Yerushalayim. Alright? What's the difference between Derech and Orach? So the Malbim says, Yerem Yidrachav Hadrachim Hema Gedolim. Those are big roads. The Orachot Hema Ktanot Mustafot Mehem. An Orach is like a path, something that exits the main road. V'ratzalomar Hagam Shleirenu Rak Drachav Agdolim Shem Sharshe Adat Yikarav. One thing is to teach them the big principles. What do we stand for? What's our belief system? There's a creator of the world. He's responsible for the world's morality. He entrusted his code of morality to us to share with others. That's the big picture. But, mikol makom, anachnu me'atzmeinu nelcho be'orcho tov ha'pratiyim u'shvilim ha'ktanim v'shinishtadel la'si gam pirtei adat anafav u'sifav. But part of that, they want to know, yeah, that's, you know, great, you're talking in generalities. What are the specifics? The specifics come to us through halacha, for us, but then there's halacha for non-Jews as well. The Shemitz Beninach, each of them have their own halacha too. So according to the Malbim, there is this obligation because they turn to us. We are the address for that. If we abstain and are not the address for that, what purpose do we have in existence? Why should there be Jews? Why are there Jews? This is a question I very often ask secular Jews, especially big Zionists. Well, not religious at all. And I just wrote one vignette in my book that's coming out in a few months. A pilot asked me that I was flying to Israel years ago, and he was objecting to Haredim and religious laws.
Was he Jewish? Or?
He was Jewish. Ole Russo lived in America now. He was actually a pilot for United Express, and he had a perk to fly to Israel free to see his family. Very angry. Why can't there be public transportation on Shabbat? Why can't he marry who he wants to marry? Etc., etc. So I said, well, what's the purpose?
Wait, is it illegal in Israel for a Jew to marry non-Jew?
It's not illegal. It's just not recognized by the state. So you'd have, you know, you can't get married in Israel to a non-Jew. For that matter, a Muslim can't marry a Christian.
So what happens if I get married in America to a non-Jew and then...
Right, that's a full faith and credit issue. The marriage will be recognized. It won't be registered, obviously, in the religious registry, but nonetheless, as marriage and the rights that pertain to marriage, that will be granted. Anyways, I said to him, "So, why have a Jewish state?" See, he said to me, "Well, Jewish state, they're killing us. They'll exterminate us. We need to protect ourselves." I said to him, "Yeah, why? Why must there be Jews in the world? The world survived the loss of the Aztecs and the loss of the Incas, loss of another dozen groups the last 1,000 years. And what if there were no Jews in the world? What would be lost?" And he had no answer. And you'd be surprised if you ask a question to someone who's not yet religious, but they're filled with the fervor of Eretz Yisrael, Minat Yisrael, the proud Jews. They say, like, why do they have to be Jews? Why? What if there are no Jews? What's lost?
We still have a... You can still have...
What's lost? Tell me.
No, what's lost is human life.
Granted, but that's...
Okay, so the Aztecs, what would happen if there was like a slow dying out of Jews? Like, we just all intermarried. That would be a loss of human life.
You're saying just Jewish culture would...
Jewish culture is poof.
Gone.
Well, I'm saying poof, or like...
It doesn't matter. So we'll be nice, and it doesn't happen in a violent way. What's the difference?
In a cultural way. Well, I feel like you could make another argument, which I've read, is that like you could say diversity within the human, multiculturalism is a value in of itself.
But what's missing?
Huh?
I could tell you an answer someone gave me once, a weak answer. Well, if there are no Jews, look at all the medical discoveries we've made. The ways, all right, microchips. If not for us, who's going to invent that? So what? There are no inventions the Gentiles made. They made plenty of inventions. No. What's the reason?
Right.
No,
I don't think. Yeah, I think you have to make. You're right. You'd have to make an argument from religion to.
You have to. Otherwise, there's no argument. So that's correct. Because you said the Aztecs were a very powerful empire. So were the Incas, and now they're no longer. And what does the world miss by it? Yeah, have their ruins in Mexico, South America. Great, all right, that's sad, they're gone. But what was the loss to the world? And the point is, no. We can never be lost. That is that you miss. We can never be fully extirpated because that's God's will. Because there's a purpose in our existence. There's an ultimate purpose. The ultimate purpose is because we're supposed to convey God's morality to the world. Now this is made explicitly clear by the Rambam in number 10, in Hilcha Malachim and Perichet Halacha Yud. Rambam says, Moshe ben Hincha Torah Mitzvah El Yisrael, Moshe gave the Torah Mitzvah only to us. Moshe Kila Yaakov, or anyone who wants to convert, can. Avamisha lo rotza in kofinot l'kabel Torah Mitzvah. Whoever does not want to convert, we don't force non-Jews to convert, but, underlined, Moshe was commanded by God to force the entire world, as best we can, to accept the seven Noahide laws. And those who don't accept it, yay, hooray, it's a capital crime. All right, we're not looking to kill people. We don't have the power anyway, nor the will. But nonetheless, that's an obligation that the Rambam says. Not all Rishonim hold that, but the Rambam says it explicitly. We have an obligation, to the best of our ability, to convince, persuade, cajole, even force every person in the world to accept the basic Noahide laws. By the way, keep in mind, it's not as if we're imposing on them, you know, they have to stay up every night and learn. They can't murder people. They can't steal. They can't worship idols. They can't blaspheme. They can't have Eivir Menachai, and they have to have a system of justice to have an orderly society.
What's Eivir Menachai?
It's, what's that?
Eating an animal.
Eating a limb torn off a living animal.
Right.
So that we're asking them to do that, but it's not draconian. That's the very basis of a civilized society. That's universal morality. By the way, think about it. If the nations of the world accepted Mitzvah Noach and just didn't murder or steal, all right, that's already a very good world. That's a much better world than we
we're talking
have
about
now.
Specifically. Were we talking about specifically? Are we still talking about governments, or are we still talking about individuals?
Both.
Right. So I'm saying on the state side, apart from what Eivir Menachai, are there any other?
Well, yeah. There's no issur of blasphemy except in Israel. America doesn't prohibit blasphemy.
So we're back onto idols and stuff.
What's that?
Oh, wait, in Israel or all of
Israel prohibits only blasphemy against Islam, not against Judaism, but whatever.
Really?
Yeah.
What does that mean, blasphemy against Islam?
We had a case 20 years ago, you know, Islam bans any depiction of Muhammad.
Right.
So a girl from Hebron, to be provocative, drew a picture of Muhammad.
Right.
And she was arrested, sent to prison, all right, for harming the sensibilities of Muslims.
Right.
Of course, if they, or for that matter, if an Israeli Jew harm the sensibility of the Torah, that wouldn't be prosecuted. But nonetheless, you see, from the Rambam, it's clear it's an obligation on Jews to do what we can in order to foster, advocate the mitzvah ben Noach, kol bo'ei olam, to every human being.
Right. So yeah. Wait. So the ones that you aren't a part of governments today,
yes,
you would say are blasphemy. The law against blasphemy and the law against...
Well, you have to get into some of the details also, because Gezel, you know, a Gentile is obligated even less than Sheva Pruta. According to the Rambam and others, a Gentile violates
Ritzifa
with abortion. With the Rambam, with abortion.
Murder?
What?
The murder? What's the English translation of Gezer?
Steal.
Oh, theft.
Theft.
Theft, theft.
They violate theft through
even, abortion. No, theft, even they steal less than a Sheva Pruta, less than the smallest coin, meaning any type of theft. I want to be absolutist and try to uproot theft. Oh, it would be nice if we uprooted theft from the Jewish world, but that's a separate issue. And in terms of Ritzicha, in terms of homicide, feticide is included for a non-Jew. Not necessarily for a Jew, but Rambam says openly, in Hilcha Malachim, that non-Jew is liable to death penalty even for an Uber, all right, even for a fetus. It doesn't mean we should look to kill people or make it a capital crime, but at least the idea should be out there that it's not a good thing. It's not just a matter of choice. Now, number 11, I cited the Or HaYashar, who turns out to be Rav Herzog's father-in-law, Shmuel Dayan Hillman from London. So it's the current president's great-grandfather. Moshe Rabbeinu commanded us, and he says, look in the Be'er Sheva. So, turn the page, number 12, the Be'er Sheva goes back a number of centuries. Yisachar Ber Eilenberg, who was a Talmud of the Levush in the 16th century. And he says, of course, the Gemara in Sanhedrin, Daf Tzadi Vav, Amid Bet, Naaman, who was a Sar Tzav of Aram, whole story of Elisha, he was a Ger Toshav. And Rashi says there that he was a Ger Toshav, meaning a resident alien, he only accepted not to worship idols. That was a Ger Toshav. Mashmi Toch Perushosha Ger Toshav She'enim Lekabal of Shum Mitzvot Rashi Lavar of Adazar Belvad. According to Rashi, it would seem, a Ger Toshav only has to renounce idolatry and nothing else. The Kosheli, Rashi writes, it's difficult to understand, because the Gemara says openly about Azara, Ezo Gertoshov, Kosha Kibilov, Sholavanov, and Azar did Remer, whoever renounced idolatry, Remer's opinion, but the Chachamim say, Kosha Kibil Olav Shev Mitzvot, Shekibil Ebene Noach. Whoever accepts all the Noahide laws, that's a Gertoshov, has the right to live in the land of Israel, is considered a civilized Gentile. Talach is like the Chachamim. So he asks, Imkein, Hech Shavak Rashi Chachamim, Upersk Reb Meir. Meaning the Be'er Sheva says, no, there's an obligation on non-Jews to fulfill all the Shemitz of Bnei Noach. All right, I will note, full disclosure, that the Gemara says in Baba Kama that now they have to fulfill them as Einu Mitzuvim Va'osim, as if they're not commanded and they fulfill, because God took away the Chiyuv of the Noahide laws for non-Jews because they just discounted them entirely and retained their paganism. Nonetheless, we still have that obligation. Now, to make the point even stronger about the societies in which we live, take 10 seconds just to hear the point.
I think
about it. Oh, well, 10 seconds. All right. The Gemara says, in Pesach, Pesach, and Bet, Rabbi Loza said, Lo hila kodesh baruch et Yisrael levenu amod el kadeshi tosu aleim geirim. God exiled us across the globe only so that we should gather in converts. Meaning what? You can go now. Meaning
wait,
what?
We should converts?
We should kitosu aleim geirim.
Isn't there also like other things about, you know, somebody wants to convert to be like, no?
Yes. It's, in other words, we don't have to proselytize. But nonetheless, we're in every country. So if we're not proselytizing, how
would... I mean, this seems like we should proselytize, though. At least to a certain extent.
It says, Shenema uzrati ali ba'aretz. I will plant you in the land, all right? Klum adam zeres soil lachnis kamakorim.
So we should proselytize in like a more like subtle way, like, you know, there's only one God.
No, so this is my point. How are we proselytizing? We're not proselytizing. What are we doing, though? We are sharing with the world our ideas. We're putting them in the marketplace of ideas. And then some non-Jews will say, you know what? I like that. I identify with that. I want to be part of that people. That's what we're doing. We're not saying you should convert, you must convert. If you don't convert, you're doomed.
Can you give a practical application of that?
Absolutely. That's our topic tonight. That means or goyim, or la goyim. That is to say, if we are engaged in the marketplace of ideas in public, and we share Jewish ideas, and by the way, it happens to be true that it's limited to the Noahide laws, but you know what's gained a lot of popularity in the last 10 years in America in very small circles? Shabbat. Even amongst the Gentiles. Oh, we know, so Goy Shabbat Chayav Mita. Goy is not allowed to observe Shabbat, but nonetheless, there are all these groups of non-Jews. It was a cultural way for time that they will abstain from technology on Shabbat. Why? Oh, day off.
My point is,
and they'll have a Friday night dinner with the family. Because they see, they look at Jews. I mean, Friday night with the family is an amazing thing. No other nation has such a thing that they're bound to eat together two meals a week, all right, without distractions of phones, televisions, etc. They want that. It strengthens the family. To be able to step back for a day from technology and say, let me just be with my own thoughts for a day and not have all this encroachment from the outside, an invasion from the outside, that's a positive thing. So they see that. Some will say, I want to be part of that. And others will say, you know what? That's a beautiful idea. What can we do in society to have that idea? Yes.
So like I said, so like I'm talking about, very often, right, and it's called proselytizing, very often you have...
I wouldn't call that proselytizing.
No, I'm saying what I'm about to say is called proselytizing,
right.
Is that you have, like, I'd say generally more, I mean, you can disagree with this, right, is that generally more radical Christians, right, or Christians coming and in going and who are representatives in American government,
right,
use specifically their faith, right, to justify applying laws to others.
Yes.
Right? Saying that...
Give me an example.
Jesus, right, is that it is within my belief system, so my church believes that it is a moral failing, or it is we are commanded by God not to abort any babies, right? Therefore, Planned Parenthood is an immoral organization and should be, like... what's the word for like when you prosecuted
prosecuted, okay.
Right? So, no, you're not prosecuted, but like legally prosecuted by the law.
Right, here's where I have to jump off that train, because...
So that, to me, it sounds like proselytizing. Saying that my beliefs, right, is that I want to save you from your from your immorality.
Yes.
Based on my beliefs, I feel you, you should follow my moral system that is based off of my beliefs.
Yes. So I hear you saying, that's where I jump off the train. Where the expression of my beliefs must shut down someone else's beliefs. That I don't believe. Now, of course, in a democracy, you're eventually going to come to some type of resolution, either through the legislature or sometimes less effectively through the courts, and they'll say, this is where we rule. But I don't believe, there definitely were, I don't think anyone ever called for prosecuting Planned Parenthood. They do call for the abolition of abortion clinics, etc. There have been many times when they have even violently attacked abortion clinics. That's where I step away from that.
So what would you say is the way you engage in government?
Okay, so I'll give you a perfect example of where, and going back to abortion, where I think Jews have a particular role to play. What's the Jewish view of abortion?
Different things.
It's quite complicated.
Yes, that's the point. It's not monolithic, all right? There's a more lenient view, let's roughly say it's the Tzitz Eliezer, and there's a more restrictive view, let's roughly say it's your Moshe's opinion. Now, for example, Jewish law always permits saving the life of a mother. Always permitted that. And for that matter, so did American law. You know, it's one of the great misnomers that Roe versus Wade in 1971 came in, or 72, came and just permitted abortion where it was prohibited before. It's not true. Already in New York in the 60s, in California, in Illinois, the liberal states all permitted abortion already. What they made it is a right that extended to everyone. But now the Supreme Court overturned that. That was bad law. And now it's up to each state to decide. From my perspective, what would be wrong with a state that said, you know what, we're California. We're liberals. We don't want to just engage in mass feticide. It's something that it's morally wrong to use abortion as contraception, and it's morally wrong to abort the girl because we wanted to have a boy. You know, maybe others will differ, but let's say that society, that liberal society, says this is where we want to draw the line. What would be wrong if they adopted the liberal viewpoint in Judaism, say the Tzitz Eliezer viewpoint? And take another state, like Alabama, Mississippi, more conservative state, will adopt Ramosha's opinion. Now, say you're encroaching religious views into the public sphere and breaching the wall of separation. And I'm here to tell you, no, you're not. Because you're not adopting this view or that view because it's a religious Jewish view. You're adopting that view because it makes sense. And it's logical. And it's principled. And it represents a certain human value, even though it's not the same. And one's going to permit many more abortions than the other's going to permit. What's wrong with adopting a rational policy that's moral, that's based on some articulable value system, all right? Because it's good, because it makes sense, and will lower the volume in the debate. What's wrong with that? So people will say, oh, I'll bring a children from somewhere. Fine, I'm not saying do it because this posting and that said it. I'm saying because in the liberal states, that you want to be more lenient. So that law makes sense. You can't have a completely open-ended, which something like California has now, New York has now. Like it's insane, you could abort in the ninth month. A healthy child you're aborting. That should offend every normal person. But you have gray areas. In a gray area, seventh month, fifth month, whatever it is, there's a liberal opinion, there's a strict opinion.
You seem to use logical reasoning when there is a abundance of different halakhic views.
Yeah, well, I'm not saying in our context, I'm saying for American Jews to contribute to the debate, look at the American society, and it is split. And there's basically self-segregation.
Are you able to because...
Why not?
Like we'd be forcing one...
What would be wrong if a rabbi came to the California legislature and said, oh, you want to permit abortions? You need some restrictions. I mean, you can't just exterminate every infant, every fetus you don't like, but use the more liberal view, use the more lenient view. And in Mississippi, use the more restrictive view. Again, not because it's religious-based, but because it makes sense, it's rational.
So you're saying that in order...
I'm saying that's Or Lagoyin.
So you're saying...
Light can be diffused depending on what is serving as a barrier.
That sounds like it's assuming that we can back up our religious... Right, so that's assuming that we can back up our, like, these moral claims with, like, objective reasoning.
I mean,
yes,
so a lot of the reasons can be subjective. Like, for example, first of all, you have to prove that human life is valuable. I don't, objectively speaking, is there a way to do that? No, but most societies are going to say...
I'm not talking specifically about...
Well, there's one real hurdle. The one real hurdle is the basic machloket. Are you going to look at a fetus as potential life? Perceive a fetus as just a tissue of the mother? All right? Mother cuts her nails, mother cuts her hair, mother cuts out the fetus. Or no, it's something different because potential life. That really is the machloket in a nutshell. And everything else, just argue over the details.
Right, so my point is that, like, that was kind of my question, is that what's the difference between a rabbi saying, I want you to follow, I believe that you should follow these restrictions because...
It makes sense.
My religion...
No, not my religion. I'm not saying that.
No, but ultimately I believe that the Christians who are proselytizing ultimately believe that there's some objective morality that they're appealing to, right? It's just the fact that in a very similar way that they're the easiest way to the objective...
So here's the difference.
You're
right, but I'll tell you the difference as far as I see it. That you take the Catholic approach, or the evangelical, which is very, very restrictive, that pro-life across the board, some exceptions, but for the most part, if it's not mikubal in the society, you're not solving any societal problem. You're just going to continue arguing for decades and decades. So that's why I wouldn't take an absolutist approach, nor necessarily based on religion. What I'm basing on is logical. You should have some restrictions.
So is the point you're saying is that we know that we have the objective truth on morality, and therefore we have an obligation to therefore spread that objective moral truth.
I wouldn't even
others.
Say it like that, but I would say that we are in possession. Look, the fact is there are different views on abortion even within the halachic world.
Right.
So you can't say one objective truth on abortion, but nonetheless, let's say we would argue that we are the repositories of God's morality.
There's an objective spectrum, but
you do know for the absolutists on either side, there can't be anything in the middle.
Sure, but I'm saying it's at least finite.
That's
there's
correct.
A finite.
There's a range.
Exactly, range.
But it's a pretty wide range. There's a range. There's a wide range, though. That's correct. Oh, very good. That's correct. But I'm not saying we could say that the fact that we have objective truth is informing our policy conclusions. But we're not presenting it to the society as objective truth.
We're Trojan horsing that.
Something makes sense. It makes sense. It's going to resolve the debate.
Is that logic always within the spectrum?
Well, you're starting... You're starting from two different sides and having them converge. You're starting from your logical framework within Judaism, which is supposedly should be your first belief, which is informing your other beliefs. Then you're starting from the societal belief. How you're forming your argument.
Yeah.
You say murder is wrong. Well, one could argue that abortion is murder, however you want to put that. And then, therefore, abortion shouldn't be done. What's causing you to... Yeah, you are being biased by your religion.
You could take any of 5 to 10 hot-button cultural issues and apply a Jewish approach without saying this... You have to do it because it's the Torah. I'm not saying that. Do it because it makes sense. It'll better people's lives. But that's Or Lagoyim. It comes from the Torah.
You wouldn't even have to mention Judaism when you're making these arguments.
In theory, not. But I would say from our perspective, that's what it means to be alive into the nations. To share with them what we have.
Why does Judaism...
But not from a religion. I don't want to impose my religion on the people. I don't want to do it.
So why does religion even have to come into the conversation?
Because it comes in only because...
Because you're a Jew.
We're saying, I didn't make up these values. Fabricate these values.
When we specifically are engaging in Or Lagoyim, the action...
Right.
it sounds like it is not necessary for religion, and it shouldn't come into it because it would be less effective that way.
No, you're not saying abortion shouldn't exist because the Torah says it's incorrect. You're saying we have a precedent of not murdering. Yeah, fine. Yeah, okay. So it seems, based on certain philosophical value that I can derive from this or that, not necessarily setting religion aside, that a fetus at a certain point seems to be alive. Yeah. This has nothing to do with religion. Therefore,
abortion, how are we going to deal with it?
Therefore, abortion should not be allowed. So that is
at
nothing.
What
to,
stage
that, have that,
you
argument, that argument has not. That well, argument
I'm
is completely.
We have something to
closed
say.
Closed off from religion.
All right.
It and is this, caught. You making that argument is caused by you being a religious person.
So it sounds like what it sounds like more than anything is that it's like a disclaimer, like. But you shouldn't completely trust me because I'm biased more than anything.
No, it's not a bias. On the contrary, because you have these different opinions.
Because if you're trying to appeal to a kind of objective logic and a kind of objective morality, not right, then
well, the thing is, as a religious person, you believe that the Torah is correct.
Yes, but you believe that the Torah is correct without using anything that, like, without using any kind of, without calling back to the Torah, that you can prove the Torah is morally correct using some kind of objective moral standard that everyone can agree to.
Well,
if Jews as individuals,
but then you have to then say, how can
if Jews as individuals, even Jews as a group of rabbis, will say, let's make this suggestion, not because we're looking to breach the First Amendment and impose a national religion, but because this approach makes sense. You have several approaches. Let the states choose one that is borderline moral.
Are morally defensible.
Morally defensible. That's
but morally defensible, specifically independent of the Torah.
Yes, I would say that too. That's correct.
So then what I'm saying is that...
But coming from the Torah, that's the difference.
Is that we...
How do we know the morally defensible as coming from the Torah? Because the Poskim said it, that's why. Those who learn the Torah...
But would you be willing to say that to a group of non-Jews?
That it's not coming from the Torah?
No, then I'm saying that, like, we know it's morally defensible for a fact because of our Poskim. That sounds like proselytizing.
Well, that's not proselytizing. That just introduces
the framework. Look, I believe that. You can say I can believe this has two different points. I believe in this from a certain sense, from a religious perspective, but I also believe in it from a secular perspective based on certain derivations that we have.
You can just say I was introduced to these ideas by Judaism, and that would be the extent at which I feel like...
That's presentation already. But the main point is, look at the Marsha, for example, on the Gemara Pesachim. He says this notion of Kadeshi Tosu Alem Gerim is to handle the Farsim Ha'amuna. We should publicize our faith, publicize our belief system, our value system. And getting back to this issue of promulgating the Shemitz Bnei Noach, Tosa says in Chagiga Daf Yud Gimel Amud Aleph, he says, it's a different area, but HaMitzvah Ika L'Moser Melahem. We have a mitzvah to transmit to the non-Jews the way they're supposed to live. In Avodah Zarah, Tosa the exact same thing. The Sheva Mitzvah that they have, the seven Noahide laws, we're supposed to encourage them as best we can to observe them. Thus, the Sefer Hasidim writes in number 17, Imroa Nochri Osa Vera Im Yochel Limchot Yimcha. If you see a non-Jew sinning, if you can protest, protest. You see, God sent Yonah to Nineveh to help them do tshuva. So if we can't always, but if we can, we definitely should. Why? Because you remember the Gemara in Kiddushin, Daf Mem Amud Bet, the famous Rambam, a person does one mitzvah, he tilts the world the zchut, one avera tilts the world the other way. It's not just us in our personal lives. And the Rambam doesn't say it's the Jewish world. He means olam kulo. What's the bottom line? Leave it to Yeshayo. Perek Mem Gimel, Atem Eidai Num Hashem. God says to us, you are my witnesses, my friends. Bavdi Hashem Bacharti. What does a witness do? A witness testifies. If we're unwilling to testify, we are not much of a witness or nation of witnesses. We're cheating ourselves and we're betraying our mission. That's my response. All right, thank you all very much.
Thank you.